Very good morning to the court. This case concerns the delay of an officer's promotion to the rank of Brigadier General, which the delay was governed by 10 United States Code Section 14311. In that statute, Congress unequivocally stated that an officer's promotion to a higher grade may not be delayed unless the officer is given written notification of the grounds for the delay and an opportunity to respond in writing to the Secretary of the Army in regard to the delay. In this case, the record is clear that written notification was not provided to Colonel Appleby. He was not notified in writing of the grounds for the delay, nor was he ever informed of his right to respond in writing to the Secretary of the Army.
Let's take the first one. Why isn't that harmless error there if you got a telephonic notification?
Because Congress specifies written notification.
So it is harmless. You just say it's error.
No, sir. No, Your Honor, it would be harmful because he was not, if he's telephonically notified that his promotion is being delayed, he was given very vague information about the grounds for the delay. He was not told that he had a right to respond in writing to the Secretary of the Army.
Wait a minute, responding is different than notification. Right. He got some notification by telephone. You say he should have gotten it in writing.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And what harm turns on that? Why is writing better than telephone here?
The written notification in all likelihood would have been more specific than the telephonic notification that he received from members of the Florida Army National Guard. My understanding and what the record supports, that he was basically given courtesy calls by these officers telling him that his promotion had been delayed and very general information about the grounds for the promotion. The two provisions operate in tandem. Clearly, he has to have sufficient, Congress specified he has to be told of the precise grounds for the delay, which is what he can respond to the Secretary of the Army. The issue of prejudice is that he was denied an opportunity to potentially terminate the delay, or in his case, he was notified after the fact for an officer who...
But that prejudice comes from not being given, as your claim that he was not given an opportunity to respond.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, the second provision, I don't have it in front of me, it doesn't require written notice, right? It says he should be given an opportunity to respond.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Nothing about written notice there.
To understand the statute, it should be read in conjunction. If at the time they're given written notification of the grounds for the delay, that clearly Congress was intending that would be the opportunity for the Secretary of the Army to inform the officer of his
right. You want a very strict reading of the first clause, but you want a pretty flaccid one for the second clause.
First one's
got to be in writing, right? Because it says written notice. Doesn't matter if there's no harm. Second one doesn't say anything about written notice.
Even accepting that argument, Your Honor, it doesn't make any difference because if he was not verbally notified that he had an opportunity to respond in writing to the grounds to the Secretary of the Army.
He doesn't have to be notified at all. The statute doesn't require notice at all of that.
How he could be given, what the statute requires is that he be given the opportunity to respond.
Well, that could just be the passage of time, that they not do this, you know, like that, and he has no opportunity to respond.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
If I say to you, I'm very unhappy with your performance, and I'm firing you, you don't have any opportunity to respond. But if I say, I've given you notice of the problems I have with you, and I'm going to wait around for a month or a week and give you an opportunity to respond, I don't tell you that. I just give you the charges. But
well,
I'm going to wait a week, and I say to my secretary, give him a week to get as an opportunity to respond. We'll see what happens.
But here it says that you have the languages shall be given. Now the secretary can't give an officer an opportunity through silence or through passivity. Now clearly that requires some positive conduct on the part of the Secretary of the Army.
Well, when contrasted with the written notice requirement in the prior clause, I'm not sure that it does. I mean, just in ordinary language, if I say I gave her an opportunity to respond because I sat on this for a week and I didn't hear from her.
If, in fact, Your Honor had told the individual, you have an opportunity to respond, and the person doesn't respond, and clearly they didn't avail themselves of a right which they were given notice that they had. In this case, it's slightly metaphysical, it seems to me, that one, Colonel Appleby is not a lawyer. He was not represented by a lawyer at that time. And if Congress says he shall be given an opportunity, I don't see any logical reading other than somehow the secretary shall notify, whether it's verbally or in writing, that he has this opportunity, because an officer is not going to otherwise know or presume. I can write the Secretary of the Army and challenge this promotion delay. That is not a presumption that even a colonel would have.
That's a fair point. He does know, however, that there are serious allegations that could jeopardize his promotion. So he ought to either get a lawyer or get on the stick and start reading what his rights are, right?
Well, his understanding of I think attributing that error to the officer when the language of Congress says shall be given, I can't conceive of a context in which that language would be fulfilled if the secretary is not informing the officer, Your Honor.
Let's go past that to your part of your argument here is that he never gets the details until after his involuntary retirement.
He certainly did not get the details of what he was accused of
until after, right?
Until during the DIAG investigation.
Okay, that's exactly where I wanted to go. It seemed to me that if you spend 8 hours being inquired about this, you've got a pretty good idea of what the problems are.
That's correct. Once he finished with those interviews, he was certainly relatively well aware of, or very well aware of, sure, what the allegations against
him were. Those were in March and May of 01.
This was months after the promotion delay had taken effect.
By the way, as a factual matter, wasn't the nomination returned by the Senate in December of 2000? At least that's what I found in the Senate records.
Your Honor, I don't know the specific date, but that seems to be a reasonable time frame in that he was initially told on the 2nd, or the 3rd, and then I believe the 6th of October of the initial grounds for the promotion delay, which...
Right, and at that point, the nomination has already occurred.
That's correct.
In September of 2000, and then, as I understand it, in December of 2000, as the session's ending, the Senate returned the nomination.
I don't recall that fact, Your Honor. I recall the district court's conclusion, as well as his submission, being that they withheld action on his nomination.
Well, December 15th of 2000 is what, you know, and this is... Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the end of a Congress. It has to be returned.
Yes.
Those are the rules.
It can't be held over, and it was returned. And when a nomination is returned by the Senate to the President has to renominate the person.
Correct.
So doesn't that, alter some of the claims in this case?
I don't see.
In other words, you're not on the promotion list, I don't think, once you're returned.
His name remained on the promotion list because the statute, 10 U.S.C. 14310 specifically governs how an officer's name is removed from the statute. And Colonel Lappleby's position in this case is that none of those circumstances.
Right. I think you were saying you point out that there's the 18-month provision, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
But the provision before that, B, says if the Senate does not give its advice and consent to the appointment, the name of the officer shall be removed from the list. I'm omitting some language there. I thought when the Senate returned the nomination, that meant that you were off the list until you were put back on the list. I could be wrong how this works. I frankly don't know how the promotion lists work.
My understanding is that his name would remain on the promotion list. It may leave the point in the process at which it was being dealt with. For example, in this case, the Senate Armed Services Committee be returned to the Assistant Secretary of the Defense. But until one of the provisions of 14310 are operative, his name would remain on the promotion list. That is my understanding, Your Honor.
Who creates the – I'm sorry to ask these side questions, but I just want to understand how this works. Who creates the promotion list?
The Department of the Army in conjunction – and for an Army officer, Department of the Army in conjunction with the Department of Defense.
And the promotion list is then sent to the White House, right?
It's first into the White House after
a military office, and then it goes, and then the president actually signs the nomination with all the names on it, right?
Correct.
And then it goes, then it's hand-delivered to the Senate, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And then it goes, it's referred by the Senate to the Armed Services Committee.
Correct, Your Honor. And if they give their advice.
And if the Senate session's ending, or if the person's voted down, there's actually something returned back to the White House.
Correct, but I don't see that as destroying the promotion list or terminating the promotion list.
What about the statute? It says the name of that officer shall be removed from the list.
It's in B.
If the term of the Senate comes to a conclusion, Your Honor?
If the Senate does not give its advice and consent. And it did not, because and the Congress came to a conclusion and the Senate returned the list.
In this case, the Colonel Appleby's what he would submit is that requires the Senate to consider. That is what Congress was going after there. If they consider an officer's name and for whatever reason decide that they are not going to give their advice and consent, then Section B would
be. There actually has to be an up or down floor vote? Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily on an up or down floor vote.
Now we've got the word give working against you. If the Senate does not give its advice and consent, so you say that's got to be an affirmative thing, not just silence.
That's the same position in regard to the Secretary's obligation to inform Colonel Appleby of his right to respond to the Secretary. It has to be a positive action.
I see. Okay. So
it would be consistent. A consistent interpretation, right, Your Honor. So the basic argument there with regard to that provision is that this requires a determination by the Senate that this officer, for whatever reason, should not be.
I would think the way that is read is whether it's returned by the Senate to the President, either because the nomination was voted down or because it was returned before a recess. Nominations are returned all the time by the Senate at the conclusion of its terms or before its sessions or before a recess.
I would submit that does well. In that case, the failure, if the court's interpretation is the failure to act on the nomination because it is withdrawn prior to the opportunity to act or because the Senate's term comes to an end, that is consistent with what the government is proposing, in effect.
Well, I think it doesn't end all of your claims. Certainly the notice claims remain, but I think on the six-month delay and the retirement claim, it seems to upset those claims if you were no longer on the list when it was returned in December of 2000.
Mr. Tony, I withdraw my withdrawal of that question.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I withdraw my withdrawal of my prior question because it doesn't say that. It doesn't say if the Senate withdraws or disapproves. It says if the Senate does not give its advice and consent affirmatively, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
It did not.
It did not.
Should be removed from the list.
Under that interpretation, correct. I would urge.
But I'm saying that interpretation is consistent with your interpretation of give and the other. It requires an affirmative
yeah. action. Yeah. In the narrowest sense, Your Honor, that is a reasonable interpretation. I think the looking at it in its context of the entire promotion process, the reading that Colonel Appleby proposes.
Well, let me say that it's common practice in the Senate, it's for nominees to be denied confirmation by silence, right? Where it's clear that it's not going to go forward, it's just frequently not the subject of a vote. This is a bone of contention among the members,
yes, sir.
Right? But the fact is many, many nominations are returned without ever having gotten an affirmative vote, maybe even most that are going to fail are failed because they didn't get a vote, not because they were voted down. And this was presumably written by people knowledgeable with that practice.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. I've used your time. Are there any further questions? We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, the issue before this court is whether the Secretary through the ABCMR was arbitrary or capricious in exercising its discretion under 10 U.S.C. 1552 to correct an error or injustice that it saw. the appellant simply doesn't like the decision of the ABCMR. The standard of review is de novo. And
it was an error, right?
They don't address whether or not there was an error. They say, regardless of whether or not, as far as the written notice.
Well, something they didn't condone.
They say they don't condone it, but they and they say, regardless of that, he was given, while they don't condone it, there's no error. Because he did not demonstrate any harm or any prejudice.
Yeah, there was, I don't condone it, but there was no injustice, is
absolutely
what they're saying.
There's no injustice, and that's the decision, Your Honor. That's what we have to look at, is his decision, the Secretary through the ABCMR, his decision to whether or not there's an injustice that needs to be corrected. And he looked at it, and he made that rational connection between the facts found and the choice made that we can see there, that the connection is, well, if there is an injustice here, there's no harm because of it, because he was given ample notice. The Secretary gets this discretion on his decision to decide the error.
What about an opportunity to respond and be considered by the Secretary?
He had that opportunity he could take advantage of, and that occurred. Remember, the fact show that this removal of the list, he got the notice hours before his name was supposed to be considered, is what
notice
the facts show.
Notice that there were
notice. Notice that the Army was requesting the Senate not to consider him. Mm-hmm. Because remember, it's a request. The Army can't say, no, you know, take it back. You know, the President has sent it over there. The Army certainly doesn't have the authority.
Right, but the practice is the Senate won't move forward when it gets that.
Absolutely, but they can certainly.
Also, the Army doesn't make that request unless the White House signs off.
On the removal?
Yeah. What's WHMO?
The White House Military Office.
Okay, well, that's who has to sign off.
They did, and but they still make the request not to consider it. Now, you know, they also ask them to consider folks, and as you just discussed, they don't consider people that, you know, they make a, you know, they through their silence do not consider people. We can't make one branch of the government can't force that other branch of the government to do or not do something.
Well, it depends which one.
Well, absolutely.
Sometimes.
Absolutely. Congress just do things all the time.
Absolutely. But the executive department, the executive branch isn't going to be able to tell them you must act on this. The Senate can either not act on it if they chose not to. And even the Department of Defense instruction speaks in languages in language of that it is a request, that it's a request to the Senate Armed Services Committee.
Do you know if this was returned on December 15th, 2000, this nomination?
I do not. It should have been, according to the Senate rule, Your Honor, that I believe you were talking to, and that's Senate Rule 31, right. Number 6, that nominations that are not confirmed or rejected during a session at which they are made and shall not be acted upon by any succeeding session without again being made by the President. So the President's got to get the list again, redo it. Absolutely.
As someone who was confirmed in late October, I'm acutely aware of this.
And absolutely. And then
someone who was returned.
So without being made again to the Senate by the President. And again, we're talking about, and we touched upon this in our brief about whether or not it even applies. Remember, the Senate doesn't promote or appoint. That's what 14.311 talks about. What the Senate does is confirm and give advice or consent. Appointment and promotion occur after the advice and consent. So we're talking a little bit about two separate things. However, the ABCMR said, looking at the rule, whether or not there was any. You know, we don't condone it not being in writing. They said that there's not evidence that he was or was not given the notice in writing. However, there was no harm. And there's no harm because what...
You're still on the notice. Let's talk about the opportunity to respond.
The opportunity to respond, he did have that. Within hours, within a month of receiving this notice, he went and sought legal advice for the actions for which he was being investigated. He submitted that, and that is on... Joint Appendix page 192, where he seeks legal advice a month after notice is given to him that he's going to be removed from that the Senate will not consider him. He sought legal review of the actions for which he was being investigated. And there was nothing that he could have done, this right to respond, within the hours that he had. And the appellant says that he, you know, that the notice to respond is so that he can investigate, gather, you know, and interview witnesses and submit something. There's nothing that he could have done in this time period that would have derailed the IG investigation.
You're saying that the at JA 192 is his initial response?
Well, it's him beginning to field his response, Your Honor. He's saying, hey, I'm being investigated about these actions that I took. And he goes to the SJA, I believe, and on that page and says, take a look at these actions. We think that we're okay, but I want you to take a look. Give me your advice. So he does that. And that's a month after. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You're talking about the 3rd November 2000?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, that...
That's a month after, because remember, on October 3rd is when the TAG calls.
But the allegations that he's concerned with at that point turned out not to be the ones, right, that hang him up.
Absolutely. As a result of the first investigation, remember, we talked about in October, the allegations are first made, some whistleblower complaints, so he seeks advice on those. Did I do okay? Did I do the right thing? In January, the initial allegations are resolved in the appellant's favor. However, the Vice Chief of Staff for the Army says, as a result of this investigation, there's some new facts that I believe need to be investigated about you, Colonel Oppelman.
When did he get notice of those?
He got notice of those. Again, it was delayed. I know that he was certainly advised of his rights in March of that year, March of 2001.
At that point, is he on a list?
He was already returned. At that point, it's returned, and by operational law that we talked about,
statute,
he's off the list.
Provisions
so
apply.
We're done at that point. And the initial delay, regardless, was made, you know, until the investigation is complete, and it started. This led into a second investigation, which did hang up, in your words, Judge Ginsburg, hung
up. And that was initiated, or at least the new charges were deemed significant in January.
Yes, at the end of that.
You said he got notice of the charges or the allegations in March.
Well, that's when he was informed of his rights. He might have had notice previous to that. I'm unaware of anything in the record.
How was he informed of his rights?
By the IG, who, in the course of an IG investigation, there are certain procedural rights, and he was probably read his Article 31 rights.
That's an assumption, I take it.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe it to be a fairly safe assumption, but it is an assumption.
And those rights would have been different from his right to be considered by the Secretary, would they not?
Those rights would have been probably more robust, Your Honor. However, they would have included a right to respond to the allegations and a right to legal representation.
Right.
And a right to submit anything before the decision maker, the appointing officer.
Not a right to appeal to the Secretary or to write to the Secretary and be considered by the Secretary.
For promotion again, Your Honor, as a result of the investigation? Because I believe that...
As a result of the investigation.
As a result of the investigation, he could have appealed the results of any investigation.
The subject of my colloquy with Mr. Tony was about his C2 right. The Secretary shall give consideration to any such statement. That's a statement made in response to the action taken that delays his promotion.
I understand your question is whether or not, as a result of the IG investigation, could he have eventually...
Yeah, isn't the IG investigation something that, again, a second thing that delays his promotion?
No, because he's off the list. I mean, we're talking about
it. Right, but he can't get back on the list unless this is resolved in his favor.
Absolutely, but it's still, we're outside of that realm, right? We're outside of that zone of consideration now. He's got to go again before the promotion review board as to whether or not they still want to ratify his initial selection by the promotion board, and then whether or not it's going to go back to the president. You know, then the president sees it again, whether or not he's going to go sign off on it and submit it once more.
If he had been cleared, is there any doubt that he would have been either kept or returned to a promotion list or put back on a promotion list?
It's hard to say, but they review it one way or the other. The promotion review board would look at it one way, that whether it's resolved in his favor or not in his favor, the investigation. The promotion review board looks at it again, and they can, based upon just their sense of whether or not this is something that needs to be, whether or not the investigation comes out in your favor or not, they have the ability to review it again. So I don't think I can say, Your Honor.
Would it depend on the needs of the service at that later date?
It would. That's one consideration, but then they would also still be considering the overall circumstances that led to his investigation.
I understand that, but if he's totally exonerated and canonized, it would still depend upon, would it not, the needs of the service for the promotion?
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's an imponderable at this point.
Right. We're left. There's so many decisions that would have to occur afterwards that make it impossible to determine whether or not it would, to say that anything is a certainty, Your Honor. I'm just going to wrap up. I know I've exceeded my time, but in conclusion, the ABCMR was not arbitrary, capricious, or in violation of law in its decision and deciding that no relief was necessary in its discretion, which is accorded the unusual discretion of the Secretary of the Army through the ABCMR. They provided rational connection between the facts found and the decision made. For those reasons, we respectfully request that you affirm the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Acosta. Mr. Tony?
I just wish to emphasize to the court briefly if Colonel Appleby had been given the written notification and had been informed around the 3rd of October or the 6th of October of his right to respond to the Secretary of the Army, he would have been able to inform the Secretary that his actions were based on legal advice. The Vice Chief of Staff of the Army gave him...
Wouldn't the Secretary of the Army have said, well, there's going to be an IG investigation and I'll wait to find out the results of the IG investigation, right? General provision, the opportunity to respond to deal with a whole range of potential scenarios, right? But in this scenario where you have an IG investigation, it's hard to imagine anything happening other than, well, we'll let that IG process run its course and then go from there.
I would not agree, Your Honor, with that, because if the Secretary receives in writing, this is what transpired. We now understand what the allegation is. These are the facts and circumstances.
The Secretary's not going to just take one side of it, right? The Secretary's going to want to hear...
Get
to the bottom of it, and that's what the IG investigation is designed to do, right?
It is, but clearly the authority is there for the Secretary to take such action, because even if he were promoted to Brigadier General and the conduct was substantiated, they could then remove him. The President can remove him from the promotion list. See, I'm almost out of time. That's why I want to emphasize that is the prejudice that he suffered by their failure to notify him, because ultimately he got a memorandum of concern, a slap on the wrist, that did not go into his official personnel record. The IG itself, and this is in the brief, noticed that his actions were based upon legal advice that he sought and obtained. The allegations of whistleblower reprisal were based upon potential future actions that Colonel Appleby may have taken but did not take. Thank the court
just
very much for its time.
I want to look up something while you're here. 14.311C. Two. It's an opportunity to make a written statement to the Secretary in response to the action taken. What is the action taken on that? What does that refer to?
Your Honor, that would be the proposed delay or the actual delay in Colonel
Appleby. So not a final result of the investigation, but just the delay because of triggering the investigation.
Correct, Your Honor. That's our reading of the statute.
Okay.
Thank you
very
much for the
court's
time.
Mr. Acosta, thank you. The case is submitted.